You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Good evening, everybody. It is 7 o'clock on the dot, 7:01 now, and here we are. This is Wednesday night. It's the couple of hours before the third and final debate between the two candidates that we have on the stage and the two people that are tearing the entire world apart. And you know, I don't want to start right there. We'll get around to it. Obviously, everything always leads back to one place, and we have a fine time navigating through these conversations. But, you know, earlier on today, I was on Facebook, and I was looking at all of the birthdays that had popped up, and one of the birthdays was a friend of mine, Andy. Now, Andy was an elderly man when I met him, probably around in 2008. I was doing a money seminar as a part of the curriculum for this Landmark Forum thing. Just lets you, we've talked about it in the past. We'll talk about it some of the times, not important. But in either case, I took this seminar about money, our relationship to money, how to, you know, goals and focus and all that stuff. And it was really fun. It was a way to challenge yourself, look at old problems in new ways and all that stuff, and you meet new people, you form groups. And Andy was great. This is 2008, so it's almost 10 years ago. It's about 8 years ago, and he turned 85 today. Only he passed away in January, I believe, of this year, and this is the first birthday that he wasn't around. Now, you know, every year I'd like to check on Andy whenever his birthday was around. I'd always go to his page and leave him a little comment, and I wanted just to see if he was still around, because that was just important to me, you know. But here, the thing is that Andy and I didn't really, I wouldn't really put any money on it that he remembered me. And his family obviously certainly wouldn't know anything about me, because our interaction was so brief. And it's not, you know, I didn't go checking up on him from time to time to see how he was and make sure everything was all right. Not because I thought that he would remember me, but just for the lone fact that I remembered him. He was always a very kind, gentle, laughing, humorous guy who always had very tender, good things to say about his family. And from the looks of all of the pictures he always posted and the pictures that people tagged him in, he was very well loved. You know, outgoing, that type. And I started thinking about that, and because it's just, you know, there's just one, everybody's here 1 minute and gone the next, and then it's just, that's where their experience ended. But it didn't, even though it's over for them, we still remember it. It was still a very real part of our lives. I can still feel, you know, when I think about the interactions I had with Andy, that fact that he's not here, that tugs on you a little bit. And I'm thinking about this on my back porch, because I took a break around midday just to get some air, because it was very warm in New York today. So I was on the back porch. I took a break around lunchtime from work, and I'm thinking about all this stuff, and that's where I found out that Andy had died. And then turn back around. Obviously, you can only dwell for so long until some other horrible thing takes your attention away. And I was starting to think about, you know, I drifted up and I looked out at the sky through my back porch, through the flag that's hanging, and just into the blue sky and the trees and just the lighting. The sunlight in general is just beautiful today. And the way it was falling at this particular time of day was even more beautiful. And I'm thinking to myself there in like the silence. You hear birds, you hear a far-off lawnmower, you just hear little things. But overall, it's very, very silent, very, very calm. And in that moment, it was exactly like how I had articulated how it was to be on the boat whenever we rent our boat on Candlewood Lake in Connecticut. And that is just, in that moment, there's no Donald Trump. There's no Hillary Clinton. And the opinions just spilling out of the assholes of the stupid Johnny-come-latelys on Facebook are nowhere to be seen. And you know what the greatest tragedy is? Is this the way it was intended? That we wouldn't have to, it's not a question. This is the way that it was intended. That we wouldn't have to worry about one person. Nobody should have to worry about one person that would affect the entirety of the country, all the way down to the lives of the individuals. And you could say, well, what president really has effect over the lives of the individuals? You know, the entire government apparatus, and you have this and that. He's just one part of it. Sure, sure. Well, you tell me what presidents are designed to be doing these in this day and age. You tell me what people are, how people see our presidents, and what kind of hands they have in the peace and the tranquility of nations. On social levels, on race levels, on socioeconomic levels, just on a rhetoric level. Okay, we're talking about presidents that have become priests. And it doesn't stop or start at the presidency. We are being controlled by priests and priestesses. S's. That's it. This is about ideology. Ideology and power grabs. This is not about liberation. This is not about keeping a people free. If people wanted to keep people free, they would not be doing this stuff. Okay, so it's not about that. And that's the thing that really got me today. You know, I'm looking at all this and I'm thinking to myself, you know, one person shouldn't be coming down to one person. This should just be a fucking footnote. And that's what the presidency, the appointment of presidents, really was when you look at the Constitution and you read the history behind the drafting and what the function of the executive branch was supposed to be. And the fear that our framers had of people that would actually symbolize this type of galvanized power. But you know, the Bill of Rights is gone now. The 10th Amendment is gone now. The press no longer is free. And the opposite is true. All the opposite things are true of this globalist way of viewing the world. And that way of viewing the world is that all must bow. All must accept our science. All must accept our God, which is in many cases government. All must accept our standards. All must accept our language. All must accept, must accept, must accept. It's what it comes down to. Because it isn't just one person in actuality. What we're seeing unveiled before us right now, just weeks before the election, especially with Hillary Clinton, Project Veritas, and WikiLeaks, and the DNC, how the entire relationship between everything is right now. What we're seeing unveiled before our eyes is that Hillary is not just one person we need to be scared about. She's merely the head of a hydra, okay? She's the head of her own government. Still, if you nipped her off, somebody would want to sit in that seat. Somebody would want to claim all of those. I mean, it's the same old thing. You know, a mob boss gets knocked off, a new one comes in, and they have to pay. They have to pay visits to all the people that they're now paying that they're now paying protection to. They have to make sure that all the judges, they have to make sure that all the appointees here and there know who the new bosses are. So it's not just about Hillary Clinton, because you know what? She's an old woman. She'll be dead soon enough. She'll be dead soon enough. What do you think? It's all just going to die? It's just going to end there? Absolutely not. She's the head of her own government, and that government is readying itself for installation. Okay, we're seeing what the government is. We're seeing all that stuff right now. The entire structure of it is being exposed, and it's readying itself for installation. Okay, right now it's a shadow government, but now it's going to step into the bio suit that is the United States federal government. Okay, and it's going to start working the biggest controls, the most powerful controls on the planet Earth. And that's what's been happening to us. It's currently happening to us, and that's what's going to continue happening to us. It's totally unmasked. And here it is. I think that I'm prepared for the hell that's coming. Because what are you going to do? Resist it? But what's going to really make me infuriated is when it continues to get worse, and what we're going to hear from the same Johnny-come-lately asshats in our lives on Facebook and Twitter and everybody else that's mimicking them. They're never going to take responsibility. Okay? When it gets worse, and there is no way it will not get worse, we all need to come to grips with this. There is no way that Hillary Clinton is going to pull a rabbit out of her hat, because she is only continuing what Barack Obama stands for to a greater degree. And that is not going to come out well for us. We cannot handle it financially. Financially, we cannot handle this. We cannot handle open borders. No country has ever lasted when you've taken it away from the establishment of borders and also any kind of sense of identity. And that's what's being robbed of us. That's what's being robbed. The innards has been turned against each other. We've been given an autoimmune disease. Okay, the society is not unified. It is completely divided. We hate each other. There's hatred. We automatically hate people that we see using hashtags. People we don't know who sent out a tweet and they just put a hashtag at the end of it that we don't like. Doesn't matter what that person, who that person is, what they've done in their lives, what they intend to do, their thoughts, whether they're a good person or not. Doesn't matter what the hell it is. We hate people because of hashtags. That's scary, you know? But because we're on such a, you know, we have as much footing right now and principled stances that we do than you would have standing on the surface of a pool of quicksand, you'll have people that will say, well, imagine what it would have been if Trump were in office. If you think that when Hillary Clinton gets into office, if she does, which there's a good chance she might, if you think that there's ever going to be a time where you're going to be able to say, I told you so to somebody, and have that person have a moment of clarity, that moment of clarity is not coming for you. We're dealing with the mentally ill. You want to see an example of the mentally ill? I got tweeted at by somebody. Now, I had tweeted out at Bernie Sanders again today. And, of course, I got a lot of attention and a lot of backlash for it. But, you know, anybody who says anything that, you know, really cuts. Bernie says, in our entire history, there hasn't been a less qualified person to become president from a character or policy perspective than Trump. Well, I mean, according to Barack Obama from 2008, he thought that Hillary Clinton was completely unqualified as well. So, I mean, you go by that, and you can't stay consistent with these people. It doesn't matter. All that matters is 2016 happens, and people grow and evolve. It's 2016, and elderly human beings grow naturally and evolve. Okay, you tell me one person who has changed past the point of 15. The elderly, Bernie Sanders, a lifelong socialist. So I said, LOL, says the person who endorses the mob boss who let him take and spend $220 million of people's money for a doomed campaign. Okay? That got a lot of likes. This one person, Dominique, came at me. Was it Belgian? Okay. So Belgian Thunder said to me, the fact that his campaign was doomed is not his fault, but the fault of the people believing Hillary Clinton. Okay? Then Dominique comes in and tweets at both of us. Dominique says, the fact that he speaked makes him doomed. The fact that he speaked makes him doomed. Speaked, S-P-E-A-K-D. Okay? Stupid. He's blinded by his white privilege and riches to address or. And I wrote back, I said address or. I don't know if it's like that was the entire thing. I wrote back, I said, please don't mention white privilege and expect to be taken seriously. And then Dominique speaked to me again. And she said, I take it you live in a bubble, period. Perhaps you think racism is over. Systematic racism is excuse, and white people were here first. And then the crying from laughter face. I don't know what you mean, Dominique. So then here's what happened. I wrote to her. I said, you're ill. I see that now. Let's just end it. As they say, don't go away mad. Just go away. And she said, thank you. Have a great day. Thank you. It's like, thank you for realizing that I am ill. I don't think she even knows how ill the word ill is used, because you'd think that she'd keep going knowing that she was just insulted. But it's not really an insult. It's a proper diagnosis. These are people that are mentally ill. Listen to this again. Telling me, because the fact that Bernie Sanders speaked made him doomed. He's blinded by his white privilege and riches to address or. Then I say, get out of here with that white privilege shit. And then listen to this. I mean, this is what is inside of a human being that is ready to be shot off as soon as they hear something. Okay? As soon as they hear something that it challenges their way of thinking, this is one of their go-to responses. Because obviously, there's no basis there. There's no intellectual basis. She didn't say anything. These are just words. I take it you live in a bubble. Yes, I guess I do. Because remember, white privilege is just a Tumblr term that has been peddled around the country in the last year and a half. I take it you live in a bubble. Oh, that's right. You're the cutting edge. You're on the cutting edge of the socio-philosophical. I mean, oh, please. Can you imagine it? That me, Dominique, who thinks speaked is a word, she's ahead of the curve than I am. Okay, I'm a caveman to her. I am a caveman to a person who thinks speaked. I can't. I take it you live in a bubble. Perhaps you think racism is over. What does that mean? What the fuck does that mean? Racism will never be over because people like you exist. And for the fact that human beings are pretty much what we are. The problem is assholes like you, Dominique, have been speakined to by other assholes who operate on just a little bit more of a higher level than you. And they've convinced you that laws and taxation is going to take away the same type of human nature that is the same reason why racism and discrimination are never going away from each other. Get over it. This is the best shot you have. This country is the best shot you have. You want to see how you want? You tell me what black majority country in the world, on the continent of Africa, you're going to have a better time. You're going to have a more secure time getting an education, staying alive, getting health care. You tell me. And you also tell me a place that doesn't have a majority population of some kind of ethnic background or a color or whatever the hell it is. And the minority doesn't feel like there's preferential treatment elsewhere. But of course, you don't care about that. You don't care about that because you're not content of character people. It doesn't matter that we have a free society over here that allows you to go out and do what you want to do. It doesn't matter like that because you have been blinded by people who need you to be blind. I can go into such deeper things with that too. You want to talk about what is really a horrible thing in my eyes that is going on in the black community? What is being done to the black community in a greater scope, in particular? Because Dominique is obviously, she's definitely a Black Lives Matter crowd person and all that stuff. It's really, really terrible. What people think, oh, this is you know, white privilege, and then over there cheering that when the president goes to Southeast Asia, saying that by 2050 we're not going to be majority white, cheering, finally, yeah, who's going to be the majority? It's not going to be blacks, because the black population is barely growing with the amount of abortion that's going on. Okay, they are importing the poor from other countries, who don't know anything about free markets, who don't know anything about individual liberty. They've only come from other places where far-left socialist ideas have failed, and they're coming to the next available lifeboat. That is the only thing that they're coming here for. It's not about freedom of the individual. It's not about that, okay? Not about that. So they're importing people who are going to ultimately take over the majority of the population here in the United States and be able to influence policy more than anybody else. And still, the black population is 23 million members less than it would be in this day and age if the abortion rate wasn't as bad as it is for the last couple of decades. If you go to blackgenocide.org, you will be... You'll get ready to weep. So I'm looking at this one day when the president said that in Southeast Asia, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Let me go figure out the abortion and projected population numbers, because we know what welfare and the Great Society and every Democrat from FDR on up and Woodrow Wilson on up has done to the black family. We understand that. We understand that the new slavery is welfare. Okay, that the fathers are not in the house, that the federal education that they're giving them is just making them angrier and confused and aimless. We understand what's going on. More and more people are waking up to it, and I am so grateful for that. I'm grateful for that. You know, especially the more and more black people I talk to that are just like, oh, believe me, it's getting around. It's getting around. You can only go so far until you promise somebody the farm and nothing's there. And it's only getting worse. But when I'm looking at all this stuff, knowing what I know about progressive policies and programs in the history and what it has done, whether it was intentionally, because if you're a conspiracy theorist, you can say it was intentional. You can say Lyndon Baines Johnson, and there's definitely things to point to, wanted to keep the black vote trapped in the Democrat sphere of influence for centuries to come. So you can say it was direct or indirect, but either case, you cannot point to a greater culprit for the disadvantage that the African American community has than liberal policies. You can't point to a greater culprit. So taking all of that knowledge and all that history aside, and then looking at that one tiny thing, that one thing that is never talked about really, abortion, and what it's done particularly to blacks, check that out. It's almost like the black population has been frozen in that small, controlled state. In that small, controlled state, imagine that. Why is that? I should have had the creepy piano on for this one. Why is that? I don't know. Is it just coincidence? If it is, it's once again a poor coincidence. So I wanted to get around to that, and you know, it's just that. Especially, I got myself pissed off when I thought about the crowd that will be saying, well, can you imagine how bad it would have been if Trump was in office? Because there's no George Bushes around anymore to blame. There's no George Bushes to blame anymore. There's not going to be one in sight for 8 years already. Then what are you going to say? Things are bad because what? Things are bad. Oh, so it goes. So we go from things are bad because George Bush to things are bad, but can you imagine how bad it would be under Trump? That's what it is. Mark my words. Mark my words. That's what's going to happen. Things are bad because of George W. Bush. And now 2017, 2018, throughout the first term, things are bad, but imagine what it would have been like. So, and why do we like this? Because we're not a principled people. We're surrounded by a bunch of virtue signaling hypocrites who are concerned with two things and two things only. That's looking good and avoiding looking bad. That is it. Nobody wants to learn. Nobody wants to learn from each other. Nobody wants to learn from history. Nobody wants to wake up to what's going on. They want to be on a winning team. They don't want to be different from their friends. And they want the most likes and shares and reblogs out of all their friends. It's about looking good and avoiding looking bad. And our Constitution, as John Adams said, our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to a government of any other. And then look who we have debating again tonight. Of the two, the worst being Hillary Clinton, look at her life. Look at the war that must be waged by her thousands of operatives in order to even paint her as in any sort of favorable light. Okay, they're both terrible, but she's the worst of the two. And she presents a most immediate danger. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you've rationalized it away. Most immediate danger. But look at her life. And there's a war being waged right now just to paint her in any sort of favorable light. The woman is a stinking corpse, and the media is the greatest mortician on the planet. That's just what it comes down to. She's a stinking corpse, and the media is her mortician. So with that being said, I want to read this one. This one article. Which actually might be a little bit of an uplifting thing. This was sent over by my buddy Rob. Kung Fu Rob. You guys, he'll be back on the show again sometime soon. And the Skype is on, everybody. The ZenLive.tv. So Skype, I'll put on the front. I got to change the Skype soon, too. We'll do something like Skype, quite frankly, something. Quite frankly, go fuck yourself. That's what Skype should be, go fuck yourself. That'd be great. Matt is with us tonight. He wasn't here last night. And Mike is over here. He's hanging out. He's having a good time. Matt, you ready for the debate tonight?
I don't need to be ready. I need Trump to be ready, bro.
Well, who the hell knows? The Skype has been on, Teddy. The Skype has been on. It's just the first time I was announced it. So you don't got me on that tonight. Okay, I know everybody starts drinking once I put the Skype on late. But I put it on beforehand. I did not do that. But let's listen to this. You guys tell me what you think. It's called Resistance is Fertile. Fertile. The Art of Having No Masters. Now, this is from WakingTimes.com. Obviously, very anarcho-capitalist. Okay, but let's take this for what it is, okay? It starts off with a quote by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, and it is, you don't become completely free by just avoiding being a slave. You also need to avoid becoming a master. In the midst of a hyper-violent culture, blinded by the statist agenda of control, militarized cops brainwashed by the statist notion of law and order, and a bloated military with the monopoly on power through tyranny, it's difficult for the world would-be resistor. It's difficult for the would-be resistor to live in it with any kind of confidence that their freedom will not be compromised by the violent thugs in power or by the indoctrinated statists that represent the majority. Difficult time to be free, made even more difficult because of the level of psychosocial status programming causing the majority to believe that everything is okay as long as they keep voting. Caught up in their hyper-realities, remember everybody, what we said about voting, okay? Right now, they're taking little nibbles out of the pie, okay? The pie being the entirety of your freedom. Okay, and the thing that they're doing is they're manipulating. Now, if you're watching anything that's going on with Project Veritas, then you know how the manipulation is happening, how they plant things, how they coax you along. If you're watching WikiLeaks, if you just watch how all this stuff is developing before our eyes, it's little steps. If it's just for one life, we want to save one life here, we want to save one life here, little nibbles, all of a sudden, everything is gone, our privacy is gone, the influence we have on government and policy is gone, the media is lying to us, we're all being controlled, we're being dumbed down, we're taking the drugs, we're taking the pills, that's exactly what's going on. Now, the only thing that stands between us and them right now is the fact that we still believe in the power of the vote, and they want us to believe that because it's much easier to get us through the art of media manipulation and brainwashing to go along with every one of their globalist plans if we believe we're doing the right thing and we've been taught to believe that we're doing the right thing. So, through keeping the illusion of the vote around and making sure that we are generally a stupid group of people, then we are unconsciously giving our consent for all this stuff to be done. Unconsciously. Because what is the alternative? The regime that's in power, that does not want to relinquish power, and all of their media operatives and all of their people on the ground and all of the people that are working behind the scenes of the DNC that organize the mentally ill to go attack people, to slander a group of people that are not otherwise doing anything to hurt anybody. If that power structure really feels threatened, and if they thought that they weren't going to win through the manipulation of the media and through the manipulation of the votes and through voter fraud and through rigging the system from top to bottom, I hate saying rigging now because it's like just a catchphrase, but it's true. If any of that power and any of that influence was meddled with, and if we were resisting all of the brainwashing, despite the fact that they're trying everything we can to do to persuade and to manipulate our consent, then you start looking at something a little bit more tyrannical, hard tyranny. The problem is right now we're going along with it and we're being led like Frankenstein cattle to the slaughter. That's it. Just zombie cattle. Just wading forward, being going one way or to the other, but we all end up going into the same slaughterhouse. You know, the alternative to this is doing it by force. Okay, right now we're being very, very good little piggies. We're being very, very good little piggies. We're gonna go out there in November. We're gonna give this one more shot, and depending on what happens, we'll see what the meltdown is. We'll see what the meltdown is. Because who the hell, what the hell is life in this country gonna be like after November 8th? Nobody hated Barack Obama this much when he was running in 2008. Okay, I was one of the people who voted for him, but there was a lot of people who knew his background and knew that despite what he was promising on the campaign trail, where this was going to lead. Obviously, we were all wrong. We were all wrong, and it did go into a very bad place. But the two people that are coming into now are so hated. What the hell is life going to be like after that? I don't know. Is this the last election we ever witness? I don't know. Who knows? Back to the article. Caught up in their hyper-realities, going through the motions of being an abstraction of an abstraction, the ignorant statists are convinced that everything is just fine, that the authority of the state is necessary, that the militarization of the police will help keep them protected, and that an obese, money-sucking, terrorist-generating military will somehow make them more secure. What is this, 1984? What's next? War is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Sadly, in some ways, we're already there. Well, you heard what was just going on this week with wanting to make a curating function of telling people what media is approved and what media isn't. Ministry of Truth, right there. There's Orwell, alive and well. The problem with statism is that everything seems okay inside the bubble, but the bubble is always about to burst. Statism is slavery by consent. Consent. It hoodwinks people into joining their servitude. It brainwashes out logic and reasoning through nationalism and patriotism. Now, of course, I have moderate views of nationalism and patriotism, but, of course, what we're looking at right now is extremes because there are no more moderates. When one group goes tyrannical, they really kick open a door and they start the pendulum swinging in one way. And of course, the pendulum is going to swing hard and it's going to reach that apex and it's going to come swinging right back down the other way. Okay? And that's what we're dealing with. So we don't have to talk about moderate nationalism again. The problem with statism is that everything seems okay inside the bubble. We got that. But resistance is not futile. And statism is by far the most dangerous religion. Sorry. Made all the more dangerous because people are bred into being statists and cannot even imagine thinking outside of that box. But resistance is courageous. The art of having no masters cannot be rationalized until one has the audacity to question things that they are. As Chomsky famously stated, the general population doesn't even know what's happening, and it doesn't even know that it doesn't know. What the fuck do we always talk about? Indeed, until the individual stands up and dares to jut his or her head above the sea of status quo conformity, they will continue to be ruled. But being ruled or not is always a state of mind. Now, this goes into what we were talking about yesterday on the Tuesday night show. All of these well-to-do, well-meaning millennials that are out there, and they were trying to make a difference. Now, in 2012, those millennials were swept up in the fervor of Ron Paul and what he was doing very quietly on the stage. Of course, he wasn't given the chance to run away and even compete with the Mitt Romney or anybody that would have gotten close to the nomination, even though he did win the delegates to speak at the RNC, and then they magically changed the rules so he wouldn't say anything. What did people learn about? They learned about the individual. They learned about free markets. They learned about free association. They learned about freedom. They learned about real equality, real chance for people, a real chance for improvement, and a real shrinking of government and getting them off of our backs. 4 years later, the millennials of 2016 and 2015 were swept up in Bernie Sanders, who seemed like he would be that guy that you can stand on his shoulders and peek up above the status quo. The only thing is that he was talking about the polar opposite. And the polar opposite of Ron Paul and libertarianism is socialism. And socialism is where we have been heading toward for years now, through many presidents, both Republican and Democrat. Statism. Statism, the state, the centralized government being the all-powerful. So they stood on the shoulders of a man who was talking like nobody would talk before, talked about equality, talked about school, talked about taking care of the young and their debts and all that stuff, but he wasn't talking about responsibility. He was talking about the responsibility of people who are out there making money to pay for those who aren't making money to go out and what? Take responsibility after they've gotten out of school? Many people who have to take responsibility for paying for their schooling, I mean, they appreciate it a little bit more at the end, even though it pains them. It actually makes them think, do I really want to go into this? do I really want to go to 4 years of college to figure it out like so many kids do now? Hell, I changed my major in sophomore year. I still figured it out. I'm lucky to have gotten out of debt quicker than I'd hoped, but I'd saved a lot of money. And through a couple of well-timed deferments. Put a pause on that, put a pause on this. Jesus. It's the opposite what happened with Bernie Sanders. And kids don't know that. They thought that they were breaking away from status quo and the establishment. That would only embolden the establishment. It creates a power in government unlike we have ever seen in this country. But of course, the other thing that they want you to be dumbed down is history. And history would tell you that it's only gotten worse as government has gotten bigger. So how the hell is electing a person who wants to expand the size of government more than the person before, than the person before, than the person before, is going to make anything better happen? It's not going to. Not going to. That's why I say the millennials, I'm starting to think and starting to be a little bit more open to admitting that the millennials of this day are very, very well-to-do in a general sense. But they've been swept up in very, very bad stuff, dangerous stuff. And they've been so swept up and so buried in it that it's hard for them to see. Well, I'll put this in the chat room. You guys can read it on your own. It's a great article. And thank you, Rob. So there you go. Let's see here. I didn't get to the Hillary book yet. But it's 7:40. I told Alex Plitzes I was going to call him. I have to call him up. I have to ask him a quick... It's got to be quick. So let me do that. There's no 8 o'clock show. Tim Pool is not on the air tonight. So maybe we'll bleed over into the 8 o'clock show. 8 o'clock hour. Let's do this. Alex. Hopefully he's still expecting my call because I'm 10 minutes late, actually. I was supposed to call him at 7:30.
Hello?
Alex, it's Frank. What's going on, man?
Good, Frank. Good to be on the show. How are you?
It's good to have you on. It's a real chill night. It was, now it's chill. I was actually really upset before. Alex, I'm depressed. Are you depressed right now?
I'm quite depressed, hoping the poll numbers are wrong.
Well, tell me something. The day, on November 9th, Hillary Clinton is president. And what are you doing to get yourself out of bed? What are you telling yourself, aside from the obvious, you have a beautiful, growing, healthy family? And aside from the obvious, what's your reason to live, to go on, and what's the light at the end of the tunnel?
Aside from my kids and my family?
Aside from your kids and your family, what is the light at the end of the tunnel?
The fact that the electoral cycle is 4 years, and we'll have a chance to do this again, and hopefully in the next 4 years they don't completely send the country down the drain.
Okay, so you know what? Let me ask you a question that I had lined
up.
That's
about as optimistic as I'm going to get, Frank.
Oh, well, it's actually a lot very optimistic to me that you think that there's going to be an election in 4 years. So that's something off the bat. But I had one question.
We'll still be here.
You think so?
I think so. Go ahead. What's the question?
Well, the question is this. First of all, Gadget Doc in the chat room, he had called in and he said he had made the claim that if Hillary Clinton is elected, that war with Russia is guaranteed, and that war will probably be thermonuclear. What do you think about that?
No, because I think the Russians are a rational actor to a certain extent. The posturing that you're seeing right now and the blustering that's going on is meant more for a domestic political audience inside Russia as much as it is for an external audience like the United States. The actions we're seeing are very reminiscent of the Cold War. They're also meant to show strength in the United States is, at least face appearance, weak, given the current administration's foreign policy record. And, we've had the leader of the Philippines basically tell us to get lost. He's meeting with the Chinese today. You have the Russians actively involved in Syria, trying to secure a naval base there. They've annexed Crimea. They're continually engaging in more aggressive military behavior towards U.S. aircraft and ships that are operating out there and towards our European allies. So they're going to continue to press the envelope so long as we let them, including cyber attacks like we've seen against the DNC.
So then what's a way, how would you say, in your own personal opinion, what would be an example of not letting them further their aggressions without starting World War III?
So without starting World War III, I mean, your response has to be proportional. It has to be deliberate. It has to be understood that it is in response to the actions that have taken place. So, I mean, it depends on which action you're talking about. You know, they want to continue pissing us off and, you know, really engaging in dangerous military behavior. Perhaps we increase military presence in the far eastern NATO states close to the Russian border, you know, which they could see as a further provocation. So you run the risk of an escalation there, so it's got to be calculated. But, I mean, deliberate military action of any kind is absurd. You know, that's why we're taking such care in Syria right now to deconflict with the Russians to make sure there's no incident. You know, because those things can spiral out of control. But to go to a nuclear war over what? It doesn't make sense. That's not Putin style.
Let me ask you, he
is a rational actor.
Let me ask you two quick questions then. The first one, do you see, if the Senate isn't lost, do you trust leadership, which Mitch McConnell, who is a fucking joke, do you trust leadership in the Republican Party, the opposition party of Hillary Clinton, to be strong enough in any way to be able to filibuster or block those Supreme Court justice appointments for 4 whole years? Either way, is 4 years going to mean Hillary Clinton eventually gets her people onto the Supreme Court?
I'm going to tell you something that might make fellow Republicans unhappy, but at the end of the day, the American people express their will through a ballot, and they put people in office who they believe best represents you know, the policy positions that represent the Americans, the American voting populace. And if that's Hillary Clinton, then she will nominate people to the Supreme Court. And, you know, the Senate is required to advise and give consent or not consent, you know, to the nominee. And I would expect that if a nominee was not qualified, that, yes, they hold it up. But if there is a nominee who is qualified, then I think there is a duty. You can't leave the court vacancy open for forever to have a vote on confirmation. Elections have consequences, and people don't realize that. You know, the Republican Party has been running on that this cycle. So that's not something that's unknown to the American people. We've made it an issue. And if the American people reject that, then they're going to get what they want, but they may not want what they're going to get.
You had once said on this show a couple of weeks ago that you believe that that Republicans are not going to lose the House for another 30 years. Some people are saying that there's going to be as great as a 25-seat swing with this election. With some people saying things like that, what do you say in defense of your original statement that 30 more years Democrats won't be able to take the House?
Not 30 years. That's not the context. 2032 is what's been estimated by the RNC and the DNC, and that would be after the next census in 2030, followed by redistricting, and the next House elections in 2032. And that's due to demographic changes that are going on. Texas in the next 12 years will demographically shift, and there'll be more Democratic voters than Republicans. So Texas will probably go blue in about a decade.
Jesus.
So I stand by that comment. And if you look at the way the districts are currently drawn and the percentage of voters who come out and vote, redistricting and gerrymandering that's taken place as a result of redistricting has made conservative districts more conservative and liberal districts more liberal. So you'd really, really have to get a good number of opposition party members to vote in your favor and independents in order to really flip a House seat. There's a good number of people who are angry. So 25 is certainly possible, but I sincerely doubt the House flips. And I stand by that comment.
Okay, so then one more time. You believe that this is this election over?
It appears so at this point, but this is nothing makes sense from an academic model this entire electoral season. So it's trending right now that Hillary Clinton will win this, you know, you and I were discussing earlier today, with at least 400 electoral votes if the polling continues to trend the way it does. So even if the national polls only has Trump down by 5%, in the states with large numbers of electoral votes in the Electoral College, she's winning. California, Florida, Ohio, and traditional states that have gone, you know, red, Missouri, things along those lines. So he basically has to pull out a command performance tonight, really show his true colors, come out and look presidential, have real policy prescriptions for what's going on. And I mean, I think where he screwed up with these awful, abhorrent comments he made about women was not, just getting up and apologizing and then looking around at the audience and the American people at home and saying, hey, which one of you watching me right now has not told a dirty joke, an inappropriate comment, something behind closed doors that you wish nobody ever heard come out of your mouth? And about 99% of people hearing that message would agree that that applies to them. And he would say, I'm human. I made an awful mistake. It doesn't justify what he's done. But I don't think he really put that in sort of human terms.
Well, you're
and
not.
Then,
this is why I say you got
to
run.
Have to be another gut.
That's why I said you have to be up there. You have to be speaking for people, man. You have to be pulling the strings, and you have to be working everybody like marionettes. You know how to respond. You have to do it.
We try, and you provide advice to different campaigns. I've done so over this season. It's up to the candidate to respond in the manner which they feel is beneficial to them. So the only other major factor tonight that may, or not tonight, but for the remainder of the electoral season that could end up having to flip would be some other major revelation coming out of the leaks. Now, you look at Marco Rubio today, who came out very clearly and said, hey, this could be the Republicans next. But if there are, in fact, if they're saving the best for last, and there happens to be the October surprise of more emails showing more direct pay-to-play with the Clinton Foundation or more dirty politics that would feed the narrative that the election is rigged, so to speak, then that's entirely possible, although it doesn't seem plausible at this point given the state of the race.
No, man, it doesn't it doesn't matter. Like, I was looking at this again today. I was watching the second Project Veritas video, and I'm looking at this guy, Scott Fovell or whatever the hell
right.
his name. I'm looking at him. I'm going, this is the most disgusting thing that I've watched in the last 12 hours. And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck? We don't live in a sane country, and this guy, Fovell, is just the next Jonathan Gruber, who went on a pretty much a college tour talking about how the only way that they got Obamacare passed is because they took advantage of the stupid idiots that follow the Democrats around and bought their bullshit hook, line, and sinker. So if somebody could go around and saying, we sold the ACA because you're dumb, and people will forget that and write it off as, oh, Stop it. It doesn't matter what comes out. I don't care about these. There's no October surprises. All that matters is Trump has a potty mouth.
Yeah. That's half the problem, though, is that message that you're talking about countering the Democrats' house, the success of the ACA, with the significant increase in premiums, the collapsing markets, the lack of competition, the fact that it's really not working as it intended to, which was an outright lie. The failure to do anything meaningful on ISIS, the failure in Syria, Iran, China, Russia, North Korea, everything she handled while she was Secretary of State, and a lack of accomplishment in the Senate, the decision to support and advocate for the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya with no post-Gaddafi plan, even though that's what they ran against the Republicans for having done that in Iraq. All of that is drowned out when you make, comments of that nature. And, that is also the risk that we run, that we ran this electoral cycle, by having someone come up through the ranks who was not a politician. So while there's many benefits to it, many of the politicians that are out there have scandals, but many of them are squeaky clean. There's a guy I went to college with who's running for Senate Missouri right now. He's a Democrat. He's running against Roy Blunt. It's probably one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. I don't agree with some of his policy positions, obviously, he's a Democrat, but he's squeaky clean. You're not going to find tapes of Jason Kander saying some awful things about women or other stuff. That's just not who he is. When you have somebody who's an entertainer who spent their life, making a splash in the press by doing outlandish things, you run the risk of this stuff coming. And while our candidates are not running for the papacy, they're not looking to be pope, they're running to be president, there is this, even if it's unwarranted or ridiculous moral pedestal we put them on, that's what they're there for. They're a role model for the American public. And quite frankly, while he said some really outlandish things, the comments about all Mexicans being rapists and drug smugglers, whatever he said, and then, that all we should ban all Muslims and then women. If you go, the comments about women he got caught on tape with, if you go back and look at the postmortem from 2012 when Mitt Romney lost, the RNC spelled out very, very clearly why we lost. We did really poorly with minorities. We need to do better with women, and we need to do better particularly with Latinos and with black folk. And he went and pissed off every single one of those groups. It was like if you took the negative side of the 2012 report and figured how could you make it worse, the comments that he has made and what he's been caught saying on tape has inflamed that situation.
Oh, Alex, I get semi-sexually aroused thinking about a scenario where you could take his place on stage tonight and apply your knowledge of all of her shortcomings and just nail her to the biggest cross there is. I get semi-sexually aroused.
Thank you, question mark, like Ron Burgundy.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Because, dude, what you just said before,
you know,
how you were just outlining everything from Obamacare to the missteps in the Middle East, everything that she was there to be a part of and oversaw, how it's all coming to a head now and it's all failing. It's so easy to pick this woman's career apart, and if anybody had a little bit more self-control and didn't stay up all night, you know, tweeting and trying to be, you know, the class clown, I really do think, like I said before, Donald Trump is the classic jackass trope. You know, the guy that, you know, when you're sitting at the high school lunch table, he'll come up and he'll rustle some people's hair. He'll poke you in the ribs. He'll fuck with your fries. He'll take a fry over your shoulder. And he's not really a bad person as much as he is just a jackass who's completely unknowing about the way he's carrying himself. And everybody just wants him to go away and he doesn't pick up on it. It's that person. If he was less of that person and being that person engaged himself in so much frivolous bullshit, there would be such an opportunity to take this woman apart limb from limb and embarrass her. But now he's fighting for his life in the 11th hour.
And the success of his family business going forward that's been significantly damaged as a result of the comments that he's made. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think, you know, he took the Chris Christie repertoire and put it on steroids, you know, the tell it like it is real guy talk. You know, but even Christie, they initially questioned whether or not he was presidential enough in his demeanor in order to actually become commander in chief. And there's a fine balance between people wanting to hear the truth and not being told what they want to hear, not having it sugarcoated, and then just really letting it out with no filter and not any real concrete thought behind it that is suggestive of a policy prescription going forward. I hate this and I hate that and these people and it's rigged. Okay, great. What does that actually mean from a policy perspective? Like, okay, when he finally got corrected, it was obviously that a professional had spoken to him about his comments about Muslims. If you actually believed that there was a true and significant problem vetting refugees coming out of specific countries where, like in Syria, the government doesn't control certain areas, there's no records, there's no way for us to tell really if these people that are coming in are, you know, are potential terrorist threats, fine. That's a legitimate argument to make, and you make a policy prescription about how you can, you know, improve the security program. You don't make ridiculous statements in violation of the U.S. Constitution where you're just going to ban all Muslims. First of all, it doesn't make any sense. It's not conservative. It's not a detailed policy proposal. And more importantly, there's not even a test for which you can apply to make that happen. Like, what do you do? Somebody shows up at the airport and say, are you a Muslim? And what happens if they say no? What are you going to do? I mean, it literally just doesn't make sense. So it's the nuanced policy positions like that and the comments, you know, that really make the difference between somebody who is politically astute and somebody who is not. And you don't have to be a politician to be politically astute. But my argument is some of the comments he's made have not been very politically astute, and he's suffering for it right now.
Yeah, I think the thing for me was I just don't want – I'm against the idea of bringing refugees here. That's just my whole thing. It's not so much blocking immigration from countries where Islam is the main religion or anything like that. I'm talking specifically with this refugee process. That in particular is something that I don't know. Just from the advice and the warnings that have been given by the CIA and the FBI about the certainty of infiltration, it's just there's no politician on earth that should ever tell a country that any amount of people are going to die, and that is a risk we have to take. That's
well, we shouldn't even be having this conversation, period. I mean, you're talking about the secondary effects of not having a viable policy in Syria or Iraq to combat ISIS, which has produced this refugee problem. We wouldn't be sitting here discussing whether or not you should or shouldn't take in refugees if we actually had a viable policy to deal with ISIS, but we don't. So that is yet another issue that is a direct result of a failed policy initiative from, you know, the Obama administration, and particularly one that Clinton supported. Again, this falls back on their lap. And instead, we look like the bad guys when people are talking about immigration policies, when in reality, that's not the conversation you should be having. Take it one step backwards. Why are we even talking about immigrants from these countries?
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah. Alex, once again, thank you so much for the call. Where are you watching the debate tonight?
The Republican Party headquarters in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Imagine that. Well, take care of yourself, man. You have a good job.
I was making phone calls for my fantastic state rep, Brenda Kupchick, and my state senator, Tony Wong. So they're here and kind of excited.
Hopefully
these down-ticket races are not impacted. They're great people.
In any case, on election night, if there's anybody that you're working with that wants to come on for a 10-minute spot on the podcast, you let me know.
You got it. I'll definitely ask around. I appreciate it. And looking forward to talking to you guys again soon. My best to the listening audience.
Will do, man. Take care. Thank you. And there's Alex Plitsis, and there goes Alex Plitsis. What do you guys want to do? It's 8:01 right now. I kind of feel like I got a lot of the poison out. Although I do have this Hillary book. We read this on the air months ago, and it is hilarious. I mean, it's scary. It's like, you know, the type of book that you would have, that Mao Zedong would print for all the kids in class in China. But this is beyond amazing. Let's see what people are thinking. Put your thoughts in the chat room. We can either lead off with it tomorrow, because we're going to need something funny to do. We did a lot of Hillary Clinton talk tonight. You want to save this for tomorrow? Is that what we want to do? I feel like everybody's agreeing with me. I think everybody's agreeing with me. I think that's what they're doing right now. I feel it. I feel like, you know, save it for tomorrow. Save it for tomorrow. Everybody needs to get stoned right now so that this debate isn't as painful. Let's hear what Brian has to say real quick. Gadget Doc, you're on the air. What's up, dude?
Yeah, just real quick. I wasn't worried about Putin. I was worried about Clinton.
Oh.
Like I said, Clinton would go to war to cover her own ass or her own failure. That was my point.
Dude, I still heed your warning really, really hard. I heed it.
Yeah, so I agree with Plitsis on, I don't think Russia's going to start a war. However, but they are making moves to posture themselves in the event of a war. Such as today, they're holding joint paratrooping exercises with Egypt, who used to be our solid ally. No problems there. Major choke point for oil with the Suez Canal. Right now, so what are they doing? They're playing the long game. They're moving on the points where they can hurt us most, both even if it's not a shooting war, even if it's an economic war. They're strongly strengthening ties with Turkey, strengthening ties with Iran, strengthening ties with Egypt. Major choke points for 40% of the world's oil supply. Bosphorus Strait of Hormuz, Suez Canal. Game over.
See, this is, I just want to be on the back porch. I just want to be at the back porch looking at the moon where there is no Hillary and there is no Trump. That's just what I want to be doing.
You need to come down here. We'll go skydiving, then we'll go to Mount Mitchell, which is the highest point on the East Coast.
I don't know.
Go
about the skydiving.
Watch some stars.
I do. You know what? I'm telling you something. I don't know what it is about skydiving. If you float it out there, there's something inside me that says I'm never going to give you a definite no, because I don't know if it's something. I think it might be something I'd be able to pull off. I don't know.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I did many, many jumps.
Am I more open to it?
And remember, I had a parachute accident, and I still do it. So that should tell you something. When you jump out after you've exited the aircraft, because it's really loud inside the aircraft, and the canopy's open, it's exactly as you explained. It's just quiet. There's nothing there. It's that just zen moment. You would totally love it. You'd be panicked jumping out. Trust me. You're scared each and every time you do it because that's a natural fear and that's a sane thing to do, okay? Mm. So being a little bit scared is fine. You just need to – absolutely jumping out, you would – I think after your first or second one, you would never want to go back where you would just – from not doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is it? Is it? Is it like a? Does it bring you face to face with mortality or something like that?
No. It's really calming once the canopy's open. Okay. It's because it's just you, and the blue sky, and the ground.
You're not hearing anything. Here's my thing. I would feel like if I jumped out of the plane, I'd be like, all right. I'd be the whole time falling. I'd be like, okay. I gotta pull it soon. I'd be thinking about pulling the ripcord, and then my worst fear would be not that the parachute doesn't come out, that the parachute comes out and the jerk is so hard that it takes the entire harness system on me off, and I fall right out of the harness system.
First off, you check all that before you get out. Yeah. Okay,
doesn't matter.
And
it'll rip.
And secondly, you could.
I'm dead.
You can loosen it. You're talking to a man that burned in on a jump. Came in like a meteor. But that's a whole other story. Anyway.
Jesus.
So it's,
Did you break anything?
Oh, yeah. I shattered my right foot, my right ankle, broke my leg in two places, broke my back in three.
Oh, exhilarating.
And suffered permanent brain damage. So yeah,
wow.
I'm lucky to be alive. That's neither here nor there.
Why is the first time you ever brought this up?
Yeah, it happened a long time ago. I don't worry about it. Jeez. I got a really cool story. This is more, you know, we should go drinking and I tell you stupid stories like that.
Yeah, I'll meet you at a Cracker Barrel.
Oh no, let's not a Cracker Barrel.
A Waffle House. I'll meet you at a Waffle House.
And an Awful House? Nah, let's go someplace. You come down here, I'll take you to Moore Square, we'll go to a nice Irish pub, and we'll get good and proper shit-faced.
I don't really drink, but I think I would do that with you, my man.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that was my whole thing, is that, you know, it's not Putin that I'm worried about. It's Clinton and her constantly having to cover her tracks that would lead to war.
Thank you so much for the call, Brian.
All right, man. I'll catch you later.
Take care. God damn it. I did it again. It never fails. And they're gone. Just like that. Oh, yeah, I know, Johnny. Here I am. It's 808. Got the 808 drum. 808 drum. You know what? Here's a preview of tomorrow. Ready? Hold on. Ready for this? Hillary Clinton by Jonah Winter and Raoul Colon. See? Raoul Colon. Open this book and discover how a scrappy girl from Chicago suburb became one of the most inspiring women in American history. And she'd kill anybody. To be so. Nobody would ever get in her way. From Jonah Winter and Raoul Colon comes an empowering picture book biography about Hillary Rodham Clinton, the extraordinary woman who had helped change the world into a place where a girl can grow up to be president. Because, of course, when this was printed, last year. They already knew she was going to be president. See, the plan was already laid out. They had the team in place. They knew exactly what they were going to do. And, of course, they were praying that Trump got the nomination because they knew that anybody else would have blown her out of the water on the fact that she is a failure on every level and she's corrupted on every level. And anybody else's sins would pale in comparison. Oh, God. Once there was Queen Elizabeth, perhaps the wisest ruler England has ever had. She was not just the most powerful woman in the world. She was the most powerful person in the world. See, kids, there was a time when women weren't people. You need to understand that right off the bat. Once there was Joan of Arc. She carried a sword and led men in battle. She was on what she believed to be a holy mission from France. She was kind of intense. Once there was Rosie the Riveter. She was a fictional character used by the U.S. government. She worked in a factory during World War II while men were off at war. You know, killing Japs. She was patriotic. She was strong. And now there is Hillary Clinton. Look at those wistful blue eyes standing in front of a portrait of George Washington. God damn, he looks like he's screaming. He looks like he's screaming. Help me. Help me. This can't be happening. This can't be happening. George Washington warned everybody about political parties, and here she is. Fuck it, we're doing this book. No tomorrow. There was once a girl named Hillary Rodham Clinton who did well in school, played sports with the boys. Yeah, I'd love to see that. Yeah, Hillary playing sports with the boys. She probably played kickball in PE and then gave the excuse that she had her period from the age 8 on up. Played kickball in PE one day. She grew up in a suburb of Chicago with two brothers, a mother, and a father who bossed them all around. Not a father, you know, I mean, whatever. I think her father was a bastard or something like that, but, you know, there she is. What is a liberal? If anything, they're only just people with daddy issues and parenting issues. So, I mean, there you go right there. She grew up in a cycle, so with the father bossed them all around. So right off the bat, remember, kids, men are evil. Not just her daddy in particular. All daddies used to boss people around because, God forbid, if the person who... Hillary sometimes stood up to him. She was scrappy. Who sometimes stood up to him? Like, what? Give us an example. What happened? Did she slam her door like any other frustrated little girl does when she runs back to her room? Was that the statement made? What are you talking about? The same father that she canonizes on TV every night. She'll do it tonight, talking about how he was such a great textile maker or whatever it is. He worked so hard. But she sometimes stood up to him. So you can tell at a young age, Hillary Clinton was not going to be told what to do by men. Hillary's mother was a traditional cunt, I mean wife, and mother. She kept the house clean and cooked all the meals while her husband made all the money and important family decisions. Can you imagine how terrible that is? To have one person slaving away, making all of the money, and all he has to make all the decisions. It kind of goes back to what we think about the modern day and voting in America. If you don't make any of the money, you still get to vote on how other people who do have to spend it on you. Hillary's mother was a traditional wife and mother. She kept all the house clean and cooked while we did that. She was born at a time when women in the United States weren't even allowed to vote. That's how it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Aside from the Democrats' best efforts, we gave, as a country, gave rights to many people from all walks. The former slave. I mean, look at the Reconstruction amendments. I mean, that you think that's those are Democrat ideas? You think the Civil Rights Act, those are Democrat ideas? They got pushed through with Democrat support? My God. And here's Hillary giving the Hitler salute to everybody. There she is. Still, both parents believe that her daughter should have every opportunity their sons had. They encouraged Hillary to go to college, which she did. She went to an all-girls school, and when she graduated, she became the first student ever to give a speech at the ceremony, where she criticized the school's guest speaker and spoke out against the war. Who was the school's guest speaker? And why did she criticize him? Why is it noble that she just criticized the guest speaker at the school? Give us some background here. It sounds like Hillary's just a bitch. Sounds like she's just a stick in the mud. That's what she sounds like. She criticized the school's guest speaker. Doesn't matter who they were or what they stood for. She had something I need to get off her chest. And it wound up in Life magazine a week later. There was no doubt about it. Hillary was a force to be reckoned with. And now, of course, you could probably find out who that guest speaker was and what she was saying about them and this and that, this and that. But remember, this is a book that it's printed in the front. This is a book for ages 4 to 8, okay? This is your 101 indoctrination. This is the first bit of history. The first bit that you're giving kids, okay? Okay, so ready. And then she met William. A fact that was clear to all who met her at law school. It was especially clear to a fellow student named William Clinton, who fell in love with her, as well as 15,000 other women. Hillary was pretty fond of Bill too. So just like her mother, she became a wife and married an abusive husband, perpetuating the cycle that would haunt her for the rest of her natural life. Marrying this man who would go on to great heights. And just like her mother, Hillary became a mother. She and Bill had one daughter, Chelsea, who looks nothing like Bill and probably Hillary doesn't love at all. Whom they adored, according to this book. Look, that's the only picture of Hillary where she actually looks loving, and it's not even her. At the same time Hillary was taking on marriage and motherhood, many women were taking to the streets, demanding equality. And as part of women's liberation movement, they were asking, why shouldn't we make more money, as much money than men, or hired for the same jobs as men, or being in charge like men? Well, be in charge of something. These questions were much on Hillary's mind, and of course, the only answer was government. And so, through her husband, and though her husband was getting elected governor of Arkansas, a place where most folks expected her to stand quietly in a shadow, Hillary was not about to give up her career as a first female lawyer at her law firm. After all, she was the chief breadwinner for her family. No small accomplishment. Living in Arkansas? Isn't that the poorest state in the union? What was she making? $5 a week? I kind of want to stop now. I'm getting nauseous. I get really nauseous. Let's do something else. Here we go. Let's keep going. But Hillary wanted more out of life. More than a good career. What she wanted to was make a change in the world. And so, she destabilized the Middle East and cause a refugee crisis that has led to the end of Western Europe as we know it.
She's a fucking monster.
She became the first lady to have her own office in the important West Wing of the White House. She became the first lady to head up her own government task force with a staff of over 500 devoted to making healthcare available to all Americans. And of course, that succeeded. Not. A mission at which many men before her had failed, and so had she. So she was the first woman to fail at that feat. Good for her. She learned everything she could about healthcare and presented those facts to Congress as no other person in history had done. you know, except for like Stalin and everybody else who wanted to nationalize industries like healthcare and, you know, Western Europe in World War II. Leading up to World War II, she learned everything she could about healthcare and presented blah, blah, blah. And though she too failed, oh, so it admitted it. And though she too failed, she showed America just who Hillary Rodham Clinton was. So all of that. Matt, you're on now. So all of that. We went through all of that. Look at what she did. The first. And although she failed. No cigar yet, Hillary. But at least the four-year-olds believe you're good. And Hillary didn't stop there. She went to China and gave a courageous speech about the way women and girls were being treated around the globe. She said, women's rights are human rights. And I'm sure the Chinese went, very interesting. Goodbye. Get out of here now. She became the first lady to run for political office and to be elected to United States Senate, representing New York as the carpetbagger she is, where she served when her husband was no longer president. Out of 100 senators, she was only one of 13 women.
Imagine that. And she got nothing except renaming a courthouse done in all of that time. Good job, Hillary.
I think it was just the post office.
It was a post office? I think it was a courthouse.
I think it was only a post office. It wasn't even a courthouse.
But then it says, but why stop at Senate? Hillary was the first lady to run for president. Of course, why stop at Senate? And if you're going to run for president, you must be strong, you must be tough, you must be confident, you must be competitive, even if it means you might be hated by millions of people. Some of these people sit behind radio microphones.
It actually says that?
Yep. Yep. Dude, I'm telling you, she becomes president. The First Amendment is under attack. We're gonna have to make our own way to.
They're already doing it, aren't they? Pre-approving articles or some shit like that. I heard that are being written about them in the Post or some shit.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going on, but there's already been a couple of really weird media things that have been floated. Media curating ideas that have been floated around. And people like Dianne Feinstein have been talking about media credentials for people and railing against 17-year-old high school dropouts with blogs out there who are becoming more credible because they're doing better work than the New York Times, because they don't want people who don't fall under their approved spectrum of media to have First Amendment rights to be able to protect their sources and not give anybody up. You know, because as we can see how whistleblowers are being treated around the country, nobody wants to come out and destroy their careers. You know, if they see something terrible and unethical going on. So they go and they try to leak it to other people. If it's the only way you can get it out there, I'm all for it, to be honest. I know some people hate Edward Snowden and this and that. I don't know too much about it. I haven't looked into it or measured the implications of how many people he's put in danger by his leaks. I don't know. But as far as the whole concept of whistleblowers in general, I mean, I don't know. Alex Plitzer says that there are definitely avenues you can go through to make sure that these things are able to be done in responsible ways. But it seems like that's not what a lot of people think or feel. Anyway, back to this piece of shit book. Others shout on television news shows, but you must take it like a boxer takes blows to the stomach. Of course, Hillary can barely stand for 20 minutes at a time, so I think that it's going to take a lot less than a punch to bring her down. Hillary didn't, not until late last vote was counted, and she had lost Democratic primaries to a man named Barack Obama. But no woman has ever come that close to being president. And of course, there's Hillary watching Barack Obama say, "Hello, everybody, I am your president. Yes, we can." And she's going, "Well, he won, but at least he was the first half-black man, and one day I'll be the first half-female." Oh, there's a loving family. It's actually the only picture of the whole family where they actually look like they resemble each other, like they share genes. And if you want to change the world, you've got to be able to bounce back from defeat. Hillary bounced back into one of the most important jobs in the world, Secretary of State, where she then presided over a State Department that has led to deaths of American ambassadors and servicemen, and of course the destabilization of the Middle East, the introduction of the Arab Spring, the stupid reset button with Russia. We can go on and on and on and on, okay? Alex Plissis can go on and on as well, and he has. It was a job in which she could make a difference, especially for girls and women, by taking donations from some of the worst countries on earth who have ever been known to treat women in any way, shape, or form, okay? She took money by using the influence of the State Department and her, and juxtaposed to her private organization. And she took donations from countries that have the worst human rights records on the planet, as it pertains to the treatment of gays, lesbians, and women in general. Okay, that's what she did to help girls and women in the countries that actually need feminism right now. Hillary now had the biggest audience she ever had. Her words mattered as they never had before. Right, it didn't matter before, and they just forcibly mattered. Hillary got this job because she was one of the best ones for it, and not because it was a consolation prize for losing to Barack Obama. Right, okay. Having spent 16 years in the White House and the Senate, she knew more about the world than most people. And what everybody's price tag is, pretty much. Only the third woman ever to be Secretary of State, she immediately made her mark. She was the hardest worker. This is, you know, I can't read it anymore. Everything is the third woman, the seventh woman, the 13th woman, this woman, that woman. It's like it's so reaching. You're reaching to create some kind of a feminist narrative here. Oh, God. Meeting with foreign leaders from mightiest countries such as Russia, speaking clearly and courageously. About what? Tell us about some of those things.
Oh, well, we don't know, and she didn't really speak courage, and she spoke through a translator, and I don't know if it was really courageous, but you'd have to imagine that it was courageous, right? Right? Right?
And meeting with foreign leaders from tiniest countries, too, such as Brunei, and giving them the same attention she gave to all the other leaders as the United States Chief Ambassador. And there she is, dressed as Mao again, in her red suit. In Egypt, where women do not have as many rights as men, she gave a speech that called for equality between men and women. She was challenged by men in the audience. How dare she come to Egypt and tell them what to do? Hillary did not back down. Instead, she tried to import them into the United States. That's it. She's trying to import all the people who hate women into the United States. Do you see those teenagers? The first kids?
The first kids to be arriving
in the refugee camp in Calais from Syria or wherever the hell they were? They look like they shave twice a day to avoid their 5 o'clock shadow. Twice a day. Children, they're calling them. Children. In Cambodia, where there's only a tiny percentage of girls who are allowed to go to school, and women are expected to walk so quietly as to not make a sound, Hillary said, "Millions of women here in Southeast Asia are trapped, laboring in fields and factories for very low wages. Women should be given the same rights as men and same dignity so that they can fulfill their own God-given potential, as if I believe in God." And then, of course, when she left, all of the women who tried to act independently were beaten by the men, and she went off on her plane ride back to the United States, where she was protected, and she left all those women in the crossfire of a lot of angry men in a patriarchal society that she doesn't understand or care to understand, because countries around the world that are sovereign, whether they are lacking in human rights or anything like that, it is up to people to take their lives into their hands, to take their culture's future and their progress into their hands, to rise up against terrible regimes and form insurrections and rebellions and install new government when needed, or install no government. But no, not when you're a priestess, not when you're a priest and you have to go around the world, you know, like a missionary does, trying to infect them with your own ideas. And you could say, well, Frank, how can you say that women having rights are is infection of new ideas? It's not. And I think anybody in Western civilization knows that. And anybody who has any kind of philosophical grounding in natural law knows that freedom and liberty, that extends to all people, all sex, and all colors. And that's what Western society has been built on. But, I mean, look what happens when you try meddling in cultures that are not ready to evolve. People have got to reform themselves. So what kind of person sets such a record? A person who's unstoppable. Hillary may not be Queen Elizabeth, but she may soon change the world into a place where a girl can dream of growing up to be president, a place where men and women are equal. Because, of course, there's no equality now, and there's nothing you can do, and it's she's the only savior. So thank you, guys. We did 30 extra minutes of time tonight, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed it, if you did at all. The first hour was really tight, and then I got sucked into this damn book. So good night. Enjoy the debates, and we'll talk tomorrow night on Quite Frankly. And thank you, everybody. Oh, nope. I want to thank my bosses. Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, Andrew Dame, Laura Veris, Matt Smith, Sean Collins, Christian Peppas, Max Ancaparato, Eric Reitz, and the new guy, Rudy Escarcega. Thank you, Rudy. Jackie Milam, Matt DeFabio, Brad Meyer, and StephanieKBeauty.com. The woman is a wizard. She'll turn you into, I mean, what do you want? You want a haircut? She'll cut your fucking hair. Although she's a makeup artist, so she's not going to cut your hair. And Jenny Lee, the good girl. Good girl, Jenny. That's it. Check out the Patreon, guys. Patreon.com/quitefrankly. Thank you for joining me. And thank you for dumping your thoughts into the chat room. And hopefully tomorrow night I get your calls to see what you thought about this debate. I want to hear all your thoughts tomorrow night. I know when I don't think, Johnny says when he doesn't think about it, he says Nikki's name right. I know. I actually thought that exact thing as I said it. Brian Gadgedoc says, remember the first person Hillary spoke out against at her college speech was the first black senator from Massachusetts. Do you know why, Gadgedoc? If you can just send me that information, we'll talk about that first thing tomorrow just as a footnote. Good night, everybody. Hope you all had a great evening. I will be tweeting. I'll be tweeting at Political Orgy and all that stuff and on Tumblr. So I'll talk to you guys then. We'll have a fun time.